This is Nature's Edge, and you're listening to Dale Stewart. We've got a real interesting guest with us today. His name is Randy Stewart. He is no kin to me, other than we are both passionate about the outdoors and about the wild. Randy's an interesting guy. He's a former member of the Army 82nd Airborne. He's also a commercial diver. He was a graduate of the Divers Institute of Technology. He also has owned a number of businesses, one being Great Lakes Marine Construction, which is the diving company, and then he also has Indian River Outfitters, and that's really the outdoor world. Randy is probably one of the most knowledgeable wilderness and outdoor guys that I know, and you listeners know I know quite a few of those guys, but he kind of he keeps a low profile out there. He's not one of these guys that's out there on the reality shows or doing anything else, but I assure you, if you're in the wild or you want to learn how to survive out there, he is the guy. Randy, welcome to Nature's Edge, my friend.
Thank you, Dale. Pleasure to be here.
It is really a joy for me to have you on. I want to, first of all, you got to talk a little bit about your early days as a commercial diver and how that has sort of led from a decision-making standpoint and the mental toughness aspect that one's also needs in wilderness survival.
Well, I think they both go together well, Dale. Years ago, of course, I watched programs like Sea Hunt and that sort of thing, and that got me interested in the diving and the underwater world, and then I became a scuba diver. And then from there, I took it a little bit further. I decided that I loved scuba diving so much that I wanted to go to school and become a commercial diver. So, hence the reason for going to Divers Institute of Technology. I learned all about the commercial diving field and all the aspects of it, how to survive underwater, how to stay calm, alert. And through all my experiences, I really came to love the underwater world. And in a sense, the underwater world is similar to above water. There's fish, there's all kinds of life that is similar in ways to nature up above water. And the survival aspect of it is interesting in itself because you're in a world of water. You're surrounded by it. So obviously, the more you know, the better chance you have of surviving. It's very similar in the outdoors.
Yeah, you're in an extreme environment there under the water.
Exactly, and I've had some interesting incidences happen. Getting tangled up in ropes in the Missouri River in Atchison, Kansas. Doing a 260-foot dive on mixed gases, pure blackness. Everything was by feel, which entailed most of the dives that I did in my years. Most of it was by feel. And so the fear factor could not even come close in my mind. It was strictly a job, and I concentrated on that level. And nothing else entered my mind except to complete the mission or the project. And so that is similar in the outdoors, really, Dale. It's very similar.
It is, and you really had to control emotions at all times just to survive what you were doing, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, like I said, you could not let fear enter your mind, even though, well, tangled up in ropes in Atchison, Kansas, in the Missouri River. That was an extremely tense experience, and I wrote a little article about it, and just quickly getting into it, you know, you get tangled up in ropes, you're underwater, you can't make it to the surface. Unfortunately, I made a bad mistake. I didn't take a knife with me, and so I had no way of cutting the lines. But I did remember one thing. As I walked on the bridge before the dive, I remembered a long pole that was against the wall of the building before I walked on the bridge. And it just so happened that, without getting into a big conversation, it just so happened that during the time of entanglement, I remembered that long pole. I instructed my tender to tie a knife on the end of the pole in an open fashion, and then take the stick and follow my line down with it. And it was about a 20-foot-long stick. I was about 20 feet underwater. And he did exactly that after about 15 minutes of getting beat up against the pier by the currents. It was extremely rough. And I managed to reach up, and after several attempts, I grabbed the knife, cut the ropes loose, popped to the surface, and they reeled me in. And then I went forward to complete the inspection, gave the engineers the information they needed, and completed the project. So in a sense, yes, you have to keep your head about you no matter what you do. You cannot go into a panic form, and you have to maintain your thought process in order to get out of any situation.
So that mindset that you developed as a commercial diver really has served you well in your wilderness world.
Oh, absolutely, Dale. I mean, the outdoor world came into a picture for me with my father at a young age. And so I learned real young about the outdoors. And, yes, whenever you get into a situation, whether it's you're stuck on a cliff somewhere and you're not real sure how to get away or how to get through it, you have to just sit back and let your mind go through all the scenarios and the possibilities, and then you choose the best one, and you hope and do a lot of praying that you've done well at choosing the best route.
What about situational awareness, Randy?
So you definitely need to be aware of everything around you. Underwater and above water, same thing. Obviously, when you're in the wilderness situation, you have to be aware of the dangers of your wild animals, your bear, your cougar, and that sort of thing. Underwater, you have to be aware of what you're putting your hands on. You have to be aware of sharks. You have to be aware of getting cut and then having that blood flow into the water and then the shark sensing it and being around you. So there's, yes, the awareness part of it is all an interesting factor that goes into it as well.
Now, are you still diving, Randy? You still doing the commercial stuff? I know you had what was it, Great Lakes Marine Construction? Was it in Michigan?
Yes, Dale. Yes.
And that's still ongoing, so you're still getting wet.
I get in the water every chance I get, Dale. Yes, I do. And, obviously I'm getting up there in age, and the commercial diving is a very physical, demanding type of situation, and I'm still in great shape. I still do diving adventures and get underwater. Mostly at this point in my age, it's scuba diving, which is a self-contained underwater apparatus. And so, I enjoy that a lot. But, yes, I get into the commercial diving still, not as much as I used to. I used to do that 6 to 8 hours every day.
Yeah, but you're smarter now.
Yeah. I think that might be a good way of saying it.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I tell people all the time. And I can't do everything I used to do, but what I do, I do it a lot smarter than I did now. What about jumping out of planes? Have you done that lately?
Not lately, Dale, but I tell you what, that was one exhilarating adventure I did as well. I'll tell you, I loved every second of it.
That is an amazing rush, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is. I had the opportunity to stand in the door of a C-130 and look at everything below, and I was the first guy out during jump school, and the jump master, he said go and tapped me on the back. The light turned green, and I headed out the door, and it's an experience you'll never forget ever.
Well, Randy, you're one of those unique people. You've been at the highest levels in the C-130s, jumping out of a plane, and you've also been at the depths of the oceans, working down there. So you've sort of covered all the environments on this planet. You were listening to Nature's Edge with Dale Stewart and our special guest today, Mr. Randy Stewart. Randy is an amazing outdoorsman and wilderness guide, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about his wilderness experiences. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Nature's Edge. This is Dale Stewart with my special guest, Randy Stewart. Randy is no relation to me other than we're both big fans of the natural world and have spent much of our life in the outdoor world. Randy, before we took the break, we were talking a little bit about all of the mental preparations, the situational awareness and everything. But when you were diving, you were spending, what, sometimes 6-8 hours under the water, shallow water primarily?
That's right, Dale. When we had a project to do, my job focused mainly on repairing dams and bridges, inspections, and certain types of construction techniques. And I never really liked to come up and down out of the water. When I jumped in, I liked to stay under as long as I possibly could and do my job. And it was just like any job above water. It takes time to do it and finish it. And so I spent as much time below water as I could to finish the job. And sometimes it would be, 4-6 hours, possibly coming up with a break, a bathroom break, and then going back down and doing my daily duties. So, yes, I enjoyed staying underwater that long. And obviously it was in shallower depths of 26 to 28 feet, nothing below that 33-foot atmosphere range.
Yeah. And now you enjoy the being out in the wild above the water, correct?
That's right. That's exactly right, Dale. I feel very comfortable above water. My father started me out as a young child doing outdoor activities. I never forget the first time. I mean, I was a small child, but you don't forget the special times, even as a child. And I can remember my father wanting me to go hunting with him. He said, "Randy, you want to go hunting?" And, of course, I said, "Sure, Dad, I'll go." And so he grabbed his shotgun, and then he said, "Well, let's go." We walked outside, and he lifted me up and put me on his shoulders. And so I hung on tight onto his forehead, and he started walking, and we got a few hundred yards into the field, and of course my grip was really tight on my father because it was a long ways down. I didn't want to fall, and so my hands would go into his eyes and he would gently say, "Hey, Randy, I can't see." And so anyway, he kept me on his shoulders. We hiked across this field, he jumped a ditch, and this pheasant took off running. Apparently I didn't see it, but he did, and he quickly put me down on the ground and he said, "Stay here." And then he started running, and the grass was so high that I was resting in that I couldn't see above it, and I didn't know where my father went, but I knew he'd be back. And so I heard this shot a couple minutes later, and then here he comes with this pheasant that was a rooster. And I just remember it being the most beautiful thing I've ever seen, with the color, the iridescent, and the feathers, the long tail feather. And my dad started explaining everything to me about the pheasant and how fast it ran, and I was just so intrigued. That got me hooked, Dale. From that day forward, I became an outdoorsman and never looked back.
Those are great memories and great stories. I also know, Randy, from discussions you and I have had in the past, that you really believe there's a need to keep a real balance between nature and man as well, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a great need, Dale. I go out on hikes today, and I see cans and broken bottles, and I see, all this trash that people leave behind, and it's just sad to see it, because it's not right, to do that to the outdoors, to nature. Nature has its balance, and we need to keep that balance intact.
Yeah, that's so true. And, man, I think people forget sometimes that man is an integral part of nature. A lot of people define nature as everything except man, but we really are an integral part of it, and we're certainly one of the caretakers of it, just because of our of the impact that we can and do have on it. So we've got to continue to be good caretakers and protect that very vulnerable outdoor world that's out there.
Yes, I agree, Dale. One thing that the way I look at nature is this: it's a home to some of the most very interesting animals that that live on this earth too. It's their home. And so when we go out there, we need to understand that, that that's their home that we're invading. And so we need to take care of it so they can live in their home and you know, be healthy and go through their life and do what they do best, which is enjoy nature and live in nature. And we can go back to our homes and do what we want to do in our homes. But when we get out into nature, we need to respect that. We need to understand that that has to be kept in balance, and that's a fact.
And don't you think for those of us that go into the wild and for people who wish to do that, they need to be aware and learn a little about animal behavior?
Animal behavior is an extreme important part of understanding and learning all about nature and how to keep it in balance. If you understand the psyche behind an animal, or the way they think, the way they act, where they get their food, every animal is different, just like humans. They're all different. They all require a different type of home space. They all require a different type of food source. And the more you get to know the animal, the more you realize that they have personalities too. They have different traits about them that require their homes to be in balance. We cannot go out there and take everything away from them. We have to make sure that we leave enough for them. We have to make sure that we understand them in every way in order to keep that balance. So yes, understanding the psyche behind an animal, every animal, is vitally important, you know, to keeping the balance in nature, for sure.
And Randy, I know you're like me. You're a big proponent of getting children in the outdoor world and starting to teach them some of these lessons very early on.
Well, that's right, Dale. I think children are the key factor to, you know, to turning things around, to be honest with you. Too many kids today are sitting there with their cell phones and texting each other, and even during a meal, you know, when it used to be where people would converse during a meal. Nowadays, it's like everybody has their cell phone and it's tick, 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 tick. You know, everybody's just sending these messages away. But, you know, the true area to learn and to live and to understand is nature. And I think that's where kids especially need to get out, and they need to learn it, and they need to revitalize this important nature factor. And the only way they're going to do it is to put the cell phones away, get off the computers, and get out there and learn about the outdoors. Learn everything you can, because without it, they will never survive. And so it's that important.
Oh, I agree, and it's really up to the parents to get out there with them and to spend that time with them. You were talking about the relationship that you and your father developed and the things, the lessons you learned from him about the outdoor. I was the same way. I mean, I owe my love of the outdoor world to my parents, both my mom and my dad, who from a very early age saw that my brothers and I were exposed to that great natural world out there.
Yes, exactly. You know, my father also taught me how to respect life in the outdoors, Dale. You know, he was a trapper, and he taught my brother and I how to trap. But he also taught us to respect the animal and to not take it over and not to go in, trap everything out, and then leave it. No, he taught us how to respect that world and how we can manage it in the right way. And so, do I trap anymore? I don't get into trapping that much anymore, but I tell you, through that process of trapping, it did give me a respect for the animal. It gave me a knowledge beyond normal knowledge. I had to understand the sense of every animal, the scent they give off, you know, their home range, you know, their habits, everything. So it was, you get to the extreme knowledge in nature with trapping and going out there and really getting into it and learning about it in that way.
That you do. This is Dale Stewart with Nature's Edge, and we're talking to Randy Stewart about the outdoor world and about nature, and we will be back after these messages.
I see.
Welcome back to Nature's Edge. This is Dale Stewart. We are talking to a friend of mine, Randy Stewart. Randy is a old commercial diver. I don't guess you're an old commercial diver. You're still a commercial diver, Randy, but also known as quite an outdoorsman. And we've been talking about the outdoor world, nature, getting kids into the outdoor world. And Randy, I want to talk to you a little bit about the importance of having a gear bag. Even if people seem to think that you got to have a gear bag if you're going for an overnight stay, but you really ought to take one with you if you're just going out for a short hike, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Gear bags are important. Obviously, you never know if you're going to get lost. You never know if you're going to get injured. It could happen. And so you have to be prepared for those sort of things. And a gear bag is something that you should take with you on every single excursion, whether it's a short one, a long one, an easy one, a hard one. Every one requires a different type of gear bag and different type of stuff in it. But, yes, a gear bag is important on every hike, every excursion into the outdoors.
Let me ask you, Randy, what do you have in your bag just for a day's hike? What gear do you carry in your bag?
Well, I always carry a knife. Knife is really important. With a knife sharp, nice sharp blade. I carry my food source is water for sure. That's very important. You have to have water. Or if I need, sometimes I carry a filter, a water filter, because water is heavy, 64 pounds per cubic foot.
Yes.
So you know, obviously, if you want to release some of the weight, you're going to take a filter along. But a knife, I do take apples, granola bars, and that sort of thing on short hikes. And then I get more extensive, obviously, with my equipment when I go on longer hikes. And depending on what it is, whether it's a kayak river trip or canoe, or whether it's a long hike, I'll take a bigger bag and I'll supply it with more interesting things.
Let me ask you about what about your fire starting equipment?
Now, fire starting, I take the old fashioned Bic lighter.
Absolutely,
that's something I take. But I always take with me, and I have it all the time, and that's a magnesium flint type of starter.
Right,
and I use my knife. And you scratch the magnesium, and you put some flakes into a combination of fire-starting material, and then you strike it, and you get your flame. So obviously the Bic lighter is an easy thing. If need be, you use it. And the fire starter, the flint magnesium, that's something that I don't use unless I absolutely have to.
Yeah, that's your fallback fire starter there. Let's talk about knives, and that is a subject, obviously, that everybody that goes into the wild has their own opinion about, and I generally carry a couple of knives with me. I carry a small, what a lot of people know is a Skinner, but I also carry a larger knife, and obviously when I'm in the jungle, I also carry machetes, but I also carry a hatchet. What are your opinions on those different tools?
Well, Dale, I'm right with you. I carry the exact same thing. I have a lock blade folding knife that I use, a buck knife. I trust buck knives. They're made well.
Yeah.
And I have a machete as well that I take with me on my longer excursions, not so much on my day trips. On my day trips, I'll take, the folding knife, and that's pretty well it. But on the longer excursions, I like to take maybe three or four different knives. I like to pack them in different containers or dry boxes because if you lose one, you have another to fall back on. If you lose that, you have another to fall back on.
Yeah.
In my opinion, a knife is one of the most important things that we can have on day trips or long trips.
Oh, absolutely.
As far as a hatchet goes, I like a hatchet that has a nice solid handle on it and is good and sharp. And again, that's something I use on my long trips as needed. And I also carry a folding saw, which can come in handy on a lot of occasions as well.
Yeah, that it can. Let me ask you about, what about clothing? How important, Randy, do you think proper clothing and boots, gloves, and hats are to an outing?
Well, obviously, Dale, that is extremely important. Let's start with your let's start with a hat and the sunglasses. Obviously, in the snow, if you're hiking in the deep snow and it's white, you can get, you know, the whiteout. And so you want to protect your eyes against the glare of the sun at all times. And then the hat, obviously, you want to protect your head. So in my opinion, you lose a lot of body heat through your head, your back, and your chest. So your head's important to keep it, you know, keep something on it to stop you from losing heat when you're in a cold environment. When you're in a warm environment, a hat is very important because you want to keep the sun off your head. You want to maintain that glare of sun from overheating you and hitting you. And so those are important things. As far as the dress goes, boots are extremely important. You have boots for cold weather. I like to use minus 40, minus 80 boots that are waterproof. And again, it depends. Are you going in an area where there is water, or are you going in a dry environment? So the boot is extremely important because you don't want to get wet in a cold environment, and you don't want your feet to sweat in a warm environment. So you have to pick the right clothing for the right hike and the right conditions.
I could not agree more. And also, people are notorious for going to the store the Friday before their weekend outing and buying all this new gear and new boots, and they don't have a chance to use that gear or practice putting up that tent until it's getting dark and the wind's blowing and their feet are blistered because they've got on brand new boots. Those are such big no-nos, but people still do it all the time.
No, that's right, Dale. I mean, you know, having a blister on your foot and then trying to make it through another day or two, it's extremely painful. It can become infected. Hence the reason to carry a first aid kit with you. That's important as well. That's really important. But going back to clothing, your footwear is extremely important for those reasons.
Yeah, and
you don't
want to
go out, buy a pair of boots, put them on, and then go on a hike, a long hike or a week hike, and think that you're going to be fine. There's a breaking in period with every type of footwear. And that breaking in period needs to be done before you actually go out and have fun in the outdoors and not, you know, get blisters all over your feet.
Yep, we've got about 3 minutes, Randy. Wanted to talk a little bit about the importance of knowing which plants are edible and can be used for medicinal purposes out there. I know in some of your survival classes you teach that as well.
I do, Dale, and if you get lost in the outdoors and something happens, you have to fall back on the knowledge that you have with your medicinals and with your edibles, plants, fungus, the different things. For instance, and even let's take trees for an example. Trees can also give you signs of where you can find water, where you can find high ground. You know, for instance, pine trees, they grow in the sandy soils, they grow on the higher ground. And you have your extreme, the other direction. You have your cedar and your willows. They grow in your wet conditions, in your moist lands, in wetland areas. And cattail. Cattail is one of the most prominent edible plants that are north, south, east, and west, and all over the United States. The cattail is one of the most edible and nutritious plants that you can possibly find. And so if you use the trees and if you use the information that you get in nature, it all comes together when you learn all about it. And the edibles, such as cohosh, salmon seal, that sort of thing, those are medicinals. They can cure certain things. Even, let's say, raspberry leaves, you can use those and cure certain ailments.
Randy, there's just a world of plants that need to be out there, and I strongly recommend people, though, that if you want to learn about the plants, don't just look at pictures in the books. You need to take a class with somebody that can point out, because there are plants out there that look similar, that one will heal and one will kill. This is Dale Stewart with Nature's Edge. We shall be back. Welcome back to Nature's Edge. This is Dale Stewart. We're talking to my good friend Randy Stewart. Randy is a member of the, well, he was a member of the U.S. Army's 82nd Airborne. He's a commercial diver and also one of the finest outdoorsmen and wilderness guys that I know. And Randy, we've been talking about a lot of stuff. One of the things that I do want to discuss with you, because I know it's near and dear to you as it is to me, and that's survival techniques and the importance of people learning survival techniques, even if they're just part-time. And particularly, as you know, I'm all about the mental aspects of survival. So could you talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the mental part, Dale, I'm with you on that. The mental part of survival is the absolute most important part, you know, keeping it together under pressure. It happens. It happens all the time. And like you said, you mentioned something about setting up a tent in the dark.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that can cause your mind to just wander if you let it. So it's important to know how to do it before you even go out. The mindset that you need to survive is that the more information that you have on everything that you're doing, the better off you are, because you're going to have to eventually pull that out of the forefront of your mind and use it. And if you don't have it, chances are panic could set in and you could make the wrong decisions.
Yeah, knowledge is king.
Yeah, it's extremely important that you study before you go out into the environment that you're going into. What animals are you going to be coming across, possibly? What are the dangers? What type of things? Are you going to be coming across cactus, rattlesnakes? Are you going to be coming across certain things? All these things need to be understood, and the best way to overcome is to put worst-case scenarios in your mind that could happen. And then you have to think in your mind as well, how can I get through that? How can I understand how I need to react to that situation? And then you have it in your mind. It's there. You can pull it out in an emergency situation, and you will get yourself out before that panic attack takes place.
That is so true, Rennie. And you know, your brain cannot distinguish between events that you sort of scenarios that you make up in your brain and actual scenarios. The brain uses that information in the same way.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
How important is planning to outdoorsmen, Randy? And I'm not talking about people like you and I that go out there for weeks and months at a time, but just the man and his wife that are going for a camping trip on the weekend. Planning is important, isn't it?
Oh, it's extremely important. You know, you have to, like I said, you have to understand what environment you're going into, and you know, how to overcome anything that might take place within that environment. That, you know, studying, Dale. I think grabbing a book. I like the Army Survival Manual.
Great book.
You take a book like that and you study and study about the things that you're going to come across, and then you have this mindset that is set and ready, you know, to get you through it. But a short hike, a long hike, people that know what they're doing or don't, young people to old people, it's all a very similar type of mindset. You have to be prepared through education and information.
And it's so important to practice those skills. You know, I've been doing this a long time, and I still will take opportunities to go out. The other day, we had kind of a rainy, wind-blowing day. I went out in my backyard and built a fire several different ways just to keep that skill level in that type of an environment tight in my brain.
Exactly. Exactly. That's very important, so you don't lose that skill, you know, because obviously, you can get rusty at anything. You know, as a diver, if I don't continue to dive, you know, I get to a point possibly where I might lose that certain mindset or I might lose that certain skill. So it's important that you take those skills and keep them renewed. You know, keep them in the forefront all the time, so you can do it almost perfectly.
Randy, I know you're one of the better instructors I know out there. Tell me a little bit about Indian River Outfitters.
Well, Indian River Outfitters, Dale, I started that quite a long time ago, and I saw a need then, you know, to get people involved in the outdoors, because I saw this trend where everybody was just moving away from the outdoors when the computer world came into effect, and I saw the different things that were taking place, like, you know, like the trashing up of our outdoors and the rivers not maintaining the integrity of things, and the balance was leaving everything, and I thought, you know, I've got to do something here to get people back involved in the outdoors and to understand it. So what Indian River Outfitters is all about is about, you know, just teaching people to enjoy the outdoors, you know, learning skills and getting people of all ages out there and teaching how to read animal tracks, how to handle canoes and rivers. We teach all about the wild and edible plants, how to locate them, you know, which ones are poison, which ones aren't. And then we, you know, the benefits, obviously, we teach that. It builds confidence. We teach survival skills. And, you know, we teach trapping skills as well. Not everybody gets into trapping, and I don't recommend that everybody does.
But it is a survival tool.
It is a survival tool, exactly. And that's mainly what it should be used for. You know, archery. We also get into archery. Archery is an interesting thing. You can make a bow and an arrow out in the wild. And so, you know, if you know what you're doing. And that's a survival tool as well. So all aspects of the outdoors is what we teach, how to identify mushrooms, edible ones, poison ones. You know, we really get in depth with your animal behaviors, animal tracks, and why we should give animals their space. Just for instance, Dale, the other day I was hiking in Arizona here, and it was on the Black Canyon Trail, a fantastic trail. And there was a rattlesnake that was in the middle of the trail. And apparently these people ahead of us had thrown rocks at this rattlesnake. And they wanted it to leave the trail so they could, you know, get around it and not be bothered by it. And it kind of made me mad, really, because, you know, that rattlesnake's home is there. He was sunning himself. That was his life, his place. And these people started throwing rocks because they wanted the convenience of getting around this snake. All they had to do was find another route around and walk around it and give the animal its space. And so we formed Indian River Outfitters to help people understand how nature has to be treated in order to keep that balance, Dale, that you and I understand. And that's really the nuts and bolts behind Indian River Outfitters, is to get people involved in the outdoors, to help them understand all about it, and to survive and to learn everything they can.
Randy, I got one quick story to tell about snakes. When I was down in Belize going in a jungle with a group of Mayans, I was actually the third guy in line, and they kept laughing at me. I finally asked them what they were laughing at, and of course, they have some of the deadliest snakes in the world down there. And they said, well, the first guy in line wakes him up, the second guy in line makes him mad, the third guy in line's the one that always gets bit. So that's kind of what I was thinking about when you were telling the rattlesnake story. Randy, do you have a website or a way people could read a little more about you?
Well, you know, I do have a website, Dale. We'll be up and running again in May. You know, it's kind of a seasonal thing. The website, IndianRiverOutfitters.com, is what we have. We're making some changes to it and things, but we'll be ready to go in May again. In Indian River, Michigan is where it's at.
Yep.
And we'll be taking people on and teaching them again to enjoy the outdoors just like we always have.
Randy, it has been a joy and a pleasure to have you on Nature's Edge with us. We didn't even get to talk about the paddling aspects, and we'll have to do that on a later show, my friend. You're listening to Dale Stewart with Nature's Edge, and until next time, I will see you in the wild.